Welcome back, dear listeners. You are listening to Stories of Change. I'm Kim Harris, I'm your host, and I'm thrilled to be with you here today as we delve into a topic that touches all of our lives at some point. And as you know, we've been discussing resilience, but today we're going to go even deeper and talk about a specific type of resilience, and that is the type of resilience we need when we're coping with unexpected change. And in this particular episode today, the journey of healing through grief. So if you or someone that you know is going through a bit of a tough time of loss, you want to tune in today. I've got a very, very special guest as we commemorate Grief Awareness Day today. It's Grief Awareness Day on the 30th of August each year in Australia. And it's essential to recognise the profound impact that loss can have on our lives. Grief is a universal human experience that transcends borders, cultures, backgrounds, all kinds of things. It's just a journey that takes us through a range of emotions and challenges as well. And it's also a path toward healing and growth and ultimately resilience. So that's what we're going to be getting in today. So I'm honoured to introduce our guest today, a true expert in the field of grief and healing and support, Christy Roberts. Years of experience, very, very large dose of compassion and dedication to helping people navigate the complexities of grief. Christy brings a wealth of knowledge to our discussion today, and her insights have touched the lives of many people, and her expertise shed lights on the transformative power of resilience. So she's the perfect guest for our show today, and throughout our conversation we're going to be exploring how to understand and cope with grief, as well as the importance of building personal resilience. And Christy will be sharing practical advice, shedding light on the significance of Grief Awareness Day, and offering us valuable resources for, especially for those who are seeking guidance on their own healing journey. And we've got some gorgeous music as well. So thank you so much for coming, Christy. It's wonderful to have you. Let's all warmly welcome Christy Roberts to the show. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone.
So the honour is all of ours having you here today. So I want to dive right into the discussion on resilience and coping with expected change and just the profound journey of healing through grief. And so I thought we'd just start with a little bit. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your background in grief and support?
Thanks, Kim. Yeah. So my background is organisational development, HR, and then I transitioned into becoming a life coach back in 2017. I learned very quickly that there's this whole extraordinary life that's available to us, how ordinarily I was living my life, as many of my clients have also learned. And then at the beginning of COVID, it was the 14th of March 2020, and I received a call. I was actually camping. I was away at a festival at the time, sitting in my tent. It was 6:30 in the morning, and I received a phone call that would forever change my life. And that phone call was to inform me that my 18-year-old son, Aaron, had been in a car accident, and Aaron had died on scene. So, literally, in the blink of an eye, the whole very foundations of my world literally imploded. And it led me onto this journey of grief, of healing, of trying to unpack this emotional pain that I was experiencing. And even though I was a life coach, I was specialising in mindset. Mm. I had no idea about grief. Mm. I had no idea how to process the level of pain that I was experiencing.
Yeah.
I had no idea how to help myself. I had no idea how to move through and live again. And the people around me had no idea how to support me. Mm. So it became very apparent very quickly that we really are living in this grief illiterate society. Mm. I had no idea until it actually hit my world and imploded my world how grief illiterate we are, and that we're not having these important conversations. And not enough of us actually understand grief. We don't know how to do anything with it. So that's been the journey that I've been on, is I've become a healer. I'm now trained practitioners worldwide in a modality called self-directed healing, mm. which processes emotional energy physically, energetically through the body. And it's very powerful in the grief and trauma space.
Amazing. I do. Yeah, my heart, I remember the time that that happened, and, mm. and you telling me the story about Aaron, and just as a mother, it was just like, oh my God.
You exactly.
know, I can, it makes me feel physically sick even now thinking about it, and especially my kids are getting to that age where they're getting their licenses, and it's like in the back of my head, and I'm just a complete kind of someone on your peripherals like wouldn't even know what you were going through at that time.
Exactly.
Yeah. Mm. So I think it's extraordinary how far you've come and that you've decided to tackle it and used it, your own experience, to try and sort of go, well, we can do better.
Yeah. Initially, I studied to become a grief educator primarily because for me, I needed to understand it to help myself process my pain. But of course, it's an enabler in my work as well, because I can, through Aaron, through my love of Aaron, I can honour him in my work, I can honour myself in my grief, and my work now has the potential, and it is affecting thousands and will affect millions of people around the world, so it's become very powerful. Yeah. It's like my superpower now is stepping into that space, turning my pain into power.
Yeah.
And learning to ride the waves, but naturally and organically, like I'm very kind to myself along the way, which is really important.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it's something that we need help with, for sure. And I think stories of change, that's the whole idea. As we share our stories, as you're sharing your story now, people really get the authentic, you know, experience then as well. Like, it's not like you're just telling someone, you know, what to do from a position of not having lived through it. So that compassion that you have for yourself then becomes a compassion that you give to others as well, because you know exactly what they're going through.
Thank you. And grief is a very unique experience for everybody. Mm. When it comes to working with people, I mean, the amount of people that come to me and I've done grief coaching, I've done grief counselling, I've done therapy, it didn't work.
Mm.
They just haven't found the right person to work with.
Yeah, because there's a difference between coaching someone through something. So coaching comes from a performance mindset rather than a medical model.
Correct.
So we are literally trying to help people move through it, not necessarily just stay in it or just talk about it, but actually truly heal. And it sounds like your method, talking about that energetic level, you know, and the emotional level, because emotions are kind of energetic as well. Sounds amazing. So with all of this in mind, I've got another question for you then. So because you just sort of started to touch on it. So grief can manifest in various ways. So obviously different people will go through grief in their own unique way. And there are some, I guess, emotions that are normal in the process. And whilst you might not necessarily feel them, someone else that's going through grief might feel that. So could you tell us a little bit about, in that natural response to a loss, what are the different stages or facets of grief that people might experience?
There's well-documented stages, the stages of grief by David Kessler and Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, and they're very clear in saying that they're not organic.
Mm.
When it comes to loss or grief, there is no normal.
Mm.
Whatever you feel is normal. Everything people feel is there for a reason, and my work is very much about, okay, that's there. Let's get curious about it and explore what's there, because everything is there for a reason. So when it comes to those emotions, they can be described in a couple of different ways. One way is like a pendulum. Mm. You can be traumatized, you can be shocked, you can feel numb, you can feel completely disconnected, you can be angry, you can feel sad, you can feel debilitatingly depressed, right through to feeling joy, relief, and even inspiration.
Mm.
And it's very organic. I like to describe it as a roller coaster, because it can be up, it can be down, you can go sideways, there are dips, there are turns. You don't know where they're going to come from. They can come from left field, and then all of a sudden you're on the roller coaster again. So it's very organic, and that's why working with the emotional energy as it comes up and learning how to just sit with it, appreciate it, it's there for a reason. You don't have to like it, but when you healthily lean in, because anger is a healthy emotion.
Mm.
Sadness is a healthy emotion. Mm. It's just that people have negative associations with those emotions.
Mm.
And so often they'll try to switch them off or suppress them.
Mm.
And so the work very much is about learning to lean in, to listen to the body, to follow the body, accept that it's there.
Mm.
Don't fight it, and then just lean in and get really curious about it in the body.
Mm, I love that. And in previous shows, I've talked about emotional regulation with our listeners and the importance of exactly what you're saying. Just, you know, name it, own it, let it be. Just let it be there. And I kind of describe emotions as little sentient beings that have come to give you intelligence on yourself, like how you are, how are you going, and You know, so the more that we can tune into ourselves, tune into our bodies, tune into our minds and our hearts, we can get this intelligence that really helps us to know what is the next best step for us.
Yes, our body talks to us. Mm. So everyone out there, really listen, pay attention. Those niggles, those pains, it might be that you're feeling numb, pins and needles, you might feel cold, you might feel hot, the heart might be racing, whatever it is, really begin to tune in and pay attention to what's happening in your body, because your body will talk to you. Mm. And it's like, it gives you the goalposts, it gives you the guides, and it's the way of navigating out through the pain.
Yeah, absolutely. I love that. I think it was one of the books, The Body Doesn't Lie, is that what it's called? The Body Doesn't Lie. Mm. And it very much describes that on it in a much deeper way. So if the listeners are interested in reading more about the subject, that's a great book. But on that note, seeing as though we're talking about just accepting the way things are, like, so whatever you find in your body, if you're finding you do have sensations of the body, or you do have a feeling that you can label with an emotional descriptor of some sort, or we just want to accept it the way it is. So on that note, I'm going to play a song by Bruce Hornsby and The Range, and this is called The Way It Is. Enjoy this one. Linking up some really important topics today: coping with unexpected change, building personal resilience, and unpacking grief. So, Christy, tell me a little bit, what actually is grief? Tell us a bit about that.
Good question. Grief is loss. That's how I like to define it. Grief is loss. And grief is also love. Mm. Because if you didn't love, if you didn't care about something that you've lost, you wouldn't be grieving. And grief has so many different faces. It can come through. A lot of people don't even recognise them. What they're experiencing is grief. They don't call it grief. They don't use that word. However, if you go through a relationship breakdown, there's loss. Mm. There is grief there. It may be there's betrayal. It could be estrangement. You might not have contact with your children, for example. There's a lot of grief. Divorce, even illnesses, health, anything that changes around your health and well-being, if there's a disability, hearing loss, eyesight, anything like that is grief. When it comes to work, your career, perhaps there's been a career change, you might have been made redundant, job loss. There could even be just structural changes at work. That can create loss. That can create a sense of grief in that change. Mm. Natural disasters. How many natural disasters do we have here in Australia and in Victoria? The bushfires, the flooding, people losing their homes, their belongings, homelessness. There's so much grief. Mm. When you talk about birth, we have miscarriages. They're not spoken about nearly as often as they should be, but it can be hugely impactful on someone's life. Mm. Infertility, birth trauma. There's even our pets, you know, our dogs, man's best friend, you know. If there's love, there's loss. And so when we lose our animals that we love, there will be loss. So many things. Grief is, it has many faces.
Yeah, and you were saying off the air earlier that we go through cycles of it, and it's not a question of if it's going to happen, but when. And sometimes a lot of grief can come in a really short space of time, but there is the research shows that it's kind of like every 9 years or so.
Correct.
We're going to have some kind of grief to
a significant
to deal
loss.
With.
Yes, yeah. We will. The statistics show that we will experience a significant loss every 8 to 9 years.
Yeah.
And sometimes that can compound, and it can come in on, someone can have several losses in a very short amount of time.
Mm. Yeah, so, and I love the phrase that you coined earlier, which was grief literacy, you know, and I think that is a wonderful objective in your work, and also even today as we're talking, the objective is to educate people and empower them, because this is such a... Change is a constant in life, and unexpected events, as we've just talked about, can be really challenging around this way. So how can individuals start to build the resilience to better navigate these sorts of changes? Where would somebody start?
It starts with accepting what you're feeling. No. What happens if a loss is traumatic? And I might just go into that for a moment, if
that'd
I may.
Be great, yeah.
When a loss is traumatic, it's typically because it's sudden, or if it's out of the normal, what's expected within life, the normal time frame of life. For example, my son was 18. That was not expected. Somebody could pass at 50 years old. That's young. 60 years old. It's young.
Yeah.
So a loss is traumatic when it's suicidal, accidents, overdoses, outside the normal, ordinary, what you would expect within life, homicide. There's many different ways that it can be traumatic. And what happens when a loss is traumatic is it's beyond our window of tolerance. Mm. It's beyond what we can cope with. Mm. So we have a window of what we can tolerate. And so, for example, you might have a parent that passes, and there might be four siblings, and one sibling is traumatized and the other three are not.
Fine, yeah.
And they don't understand that this one sibling is quite traumatized. But all that's happening there is it is beyond their experience of what they can tolerate. Mm. It's a heightened emotional response. And so when we go outside of what we can tolerate, our coping mechanisms, our resilience, sort of, it just dissipates.
Yeah,
and it can go two ways. When we're outside our window of tolerance, we can go up into a hyperarousal, which is very fast. It's fight, flight, it's hypervigilant, it's the panic, it's the anxiety, it's very fast.
Yep.
The other way that we can go is we can drop down, and we can go both. We can go up and then down as well. And we can drop down when we're outside our window of tolerance into hypoarousal, which is when the dorsal vagals are engaged, and that is more of a collapse, submit, a numbness, a disconnection, a freeze response.
Mm.
And so when it comes to coping with change, we need to work with our resilience level. We need to feel the emotion in our body. It's almost like we need to regulate the nervous system and calm it down. Mm. The way that I do that is I actually feel the emotion. Mm. I allow the clients, I teach the clients how to lean in, feel their emotions, so it normalizes within the body. Mm. And then my goal is to always extend the window of tolerance. So that is their resilience window, so that they can cope with it.
Yep.
Because when it comes to change, we often fear what's outside of our comfort level, and we'll often stay within what is normal, predictable, certain to us, even though it may not be healthy, because we fear what's outside of that because it's beyond what we're used to. And so it's also, I work at expanding the window of tolerance, but at the same time, I also work with helping people understand to move outside their comfort level, move into that fear zone, because fear and excitement, the body doesn't know the difference.
Yeah.
It's the same thing. And so the more we step into outside our comfort zone and into that fear zone, and rename it expansion, excitement.
A more positive label.
Exactly. Yep. But the body, the brain doesn't know the difference. So this is actually a bit of a hack.
Yeah.
The more that we can step into that zone, the more that we can grow our resilience and our comfort. Our comfort level expands, and therefore our resilience grows at the same time.
Yeah, I love that whole, just the way that you've described it as that tolerance window and the resilience window. And I think that's, that I can see, obviously, from an emotional point of view, because emotions are chemistry, so we don't actually have that many emotions. We've got lots of words that we use to describe the feeling of an emotion. Sometimes it really is uncomfortable, and I love the way that you've described it. Even you're making me think about that gap that we can sometimes have. We can then try to cope with that overwhelm or that lack of tolerance by using or employing unhealthy coping strategies as well, because we're doing anything we can at that point to lower that threshold and lower that point of tolerance. And so I have talked about in previous shows, like, some of the coping strategies that we can be a quick fix, but not necessarily for the long term are going to really give us that healing that you're talking about.
It needs to be healthy, those coping strategies. So, you know, if you're moving towards addictions or you're moving to anything, when it comes to those types of behaviours, all we're trying to do is numb our pain.
Yeah.
And the addiction, I see addiction as a symptom of the pain. It's not the problem. The problem is the emotion underneath it. What are you trying to numb?
Yeah.
What happens when we go into this hypervigilant state in trauma is everything fragments off into pieces.
Yeah.
And you might have flooding images that come in, visualizations. It could be the smell of something could trigger you. So many things can trigger you.
Yeah.
And the work is to sort of go in and work with those pieces and bring them back in so that we pick up the pieces. It's like putting the puzzle back together, moving that resilience line so that we are having coping mechanisms that are healthy. One way to know if your coping mechanisms are healthy is you've got to ask yourself, is this good for me? Yes or no? Is this good for others? Yes or no? And is this good for the environment? Yes or no? And you've got your answer.
Absolutely. I love that. Yeah, that's so amazing. I really like the way you describe that. Thank you for that. That's
You're awesome. Welcome.
So let's play another song. So we've got a couple of songs here that you've picked, and I've got that are on your playlist, your grief and connection playlist. So if you are interested in some music therapy, you can join any one of our lists. Christy's got a list. I've got lists as well of songs, and this is a song from the list. I don't want to miss a thing. So I'm going to play this one by Aerosmith. Well, don't you love it when technology fails you? That was actually Sarah McLachlan with Angels. We were meant to play Aerosmith's I Don't Want to Miss a Thing. It just skipped over that one for some reason. So it must have been the universe or something. Really wanted you to listen to that song instead. So I hope you enjoyed that one. And we're talking about resilience. We're talking about coping with unexpected change. And Christy's giving us a lot of information to understand ourselves, which is so important. Sometimes when we just have that understanding of self and why we're doing the things that we're doing and why we're reacting the ways that we are can be healing in and of itself. So this is why we're talking about grief today. And apart from that, we're also talking about it because it's a good opportunity because we've got Grief Awareness Day coming up. But before we talk about all of that, let's talk about the role of our loved ones when we're going through grief. As you touched on at the very beginning of the show, you found yourself in this very unexpected place dealing with the loss of Aaron, and you weren't equipped to deal with it, and the people around you weren't really equipped to deal with it, and it's because you don't really have this conversation going about grief. So what role do friends and family have in this process, and what role do professionals or professional support play?
It's a great question. When it comes to friends and family, we're not professionally equipped to deal with the grief, with the loss. However, the role is absolutely imperative in our healing process. Having people that can come in and just sit with you is so important. But I think the main thing to understand when it comes to friends and family is often, in my situation, for example, when Aaron died, everyone I knew was also grieving. It wasn't just me. Everyone was grieving. When you have a loss in a community, everyone is grieving. And everyone will grieve differently. And this is a real challenge for couples, for example, because the thing is you cannot be each other's support when you're both empty. So that's why it's so important to reach outside. But everyone will have their role to play. For example, you might have someone in your life who is not acknowledging or witnessing your grief at all. However, sometimes you might just want an escape for them from the grief and go to the movies. And they could be your movie friend.
Yeah, or your coffee buddy. Or your winery tour buddy.
Exactly. And then you might have other friends that will have the conversations and that can go deeper. I had to learn how to navigate that. I had to learn who could go there, who couldn't go there. I didn't want to close my circle of friends because that can happen when people are experiencing loss. Their world can get a lot smaller. I wanted my world to get bigger, not smaller, because I am on this journey to living. I mean, in my opinion, we're here to live our best life. It's what we're here for. However, we need to navigate the changes and the loss and the experiences, the lemons that life throws at us. So the roles, different friends will play different roles. When it comes to experts, you have to find people who are grief informed and they understand grief. They need to have done the work, because if they don't, they're not going to be able to support you. I worked with a young girl, she was 16 just a couple of weeks ago, and her father passed when she was 16. She's now 28. And he died suddenly. They were living overseas, so they packed up, came back to Australia. So she not only had the loss of her father, she had the loss of all her friends, her stability, her home, back into Australia. She did go to grief counselling, and I said, how was that? And she said, well, she just told me I had to get over it. That is not helpful.
No.
And anybody that understands grief would never, ever say that, because the grief journey is very much about learning how to integrate the loss.
Mm.
If you think about it, because we tend to put grief on a time frame. Many people believe that, you know, 6 months, they'll be right in 6 months.
Mm.
You know, we just need to hold them for those first few months. It's not true.
No.
Time doesn't heal grief.
No.
It's what we do with that time that matters. And I think it's probably one of the most damaging myths of all time is that time heals all wounds.
Mm.
It doesn't. We need to learn those healthy ways to express, to feel, to do what we need to do, to incorporate the loss. My work is very much about learning how to integrate the loss, because in 6 months' time, Aaron will still be dead.
Mm.
That is a fact. And there is nobody on this planet that can tell me that I will not miss my son in 6 months' time.
No.
And so, therefore, that is a grief, that is a loss that I will forever live with.
Mm.
Now, will it be as devastating and debilitating as it's been? It changes.
Mm.
I am doing the work, so it does change as time goes on. So healing, I mean, when people say, oh, you can heal grief, well, to me, I say, well, define healing.
Yes, yes.
So it's learning to live with the loss. It's learning to integrate the pain. It's learning to how to navigate a life without him physically here.
Mm.
So your person that's not here, mm. how can you bring them with you on the journey?
Mm.
That's a really important aspect of, you know, creating rituals and systems and ways to bring them with you so you feel connected to them moving forward, and you're creating a new relationship with them moving forward.
I love that, and that was going to be my next question, interestingly, which is, in your experience, what are some of the effective ways that you can honour the memory of the loved one and still move forward without them? So, yeah, some rituals. What's an example of a ritual?
I have many rituals.
Yeah, yeah.
We have spaghetti bolognese nights because Aaron loves spaghetti bolognese. And it was funny, the last spaghetti bolognese night that I hosted a few weeks ago, as we set the table and we sat down, I had some plants on a spare place on the table, and I just heard him in my head, you know. It was the funniest thing. Some people will think I'm crazy, but I don't care. It was like, well, what about me? Can you move the plants? So you can set a place at the table. You can journal. You can write them letters.
Yeah.
You can have a phone and ring them and talk to them.
Yeah.
You can have two seats and they can face each other and you can have a conversation with them.
Yeah.
You can walk. You can go to their favourite places. You can play their favourite songs. You can cook their favourite meals. There are so many ways that we can connect. Some people like candles. I have memorial nights, tribute days. So I have a tribute day on the 14th of March every year. And I also have a tribute day for his birthday every year. We've done a memorial garden. Next year, I'm thinking of getting pebbles, and people can put pebbles under the plants, paint them. There's lots of different things that we can do that are healthy, that are meaningful, but they need to connect you with your person. So what did your person like to do, and what things did they do around the house or in the community? And you find ways to talk about them and honour that.
Yeah, I love that. I love that because I guess from my own personal experience of grief when I've lost people, it was almost like people just didn't want to talk about it. And I think their heart was in the right place. They just didn't want to trigger an upset for me. But it was just all of a sudden this person was just removed from my life in every way. And funnily enough, I lost a couple of friends recently and I can't delete their numbers from my phone. Like, I just, it feels like I know they're not there, but I love the idea of giving them a call.
Yeah, like, and nor should you delete those numbers. And I'm sorry to hear you've had recent loss.
Mm.
Connect with them.
Yeah.
It becomes more of a spiritual relationship rather than a physical relationship. By spiritual, I'm not talking about religion. I'm talking about it just moves to a non-physical relationship moving forward.
That. And I guess touching on that, I imagine in your work you would be aware of the fact that we are influenced by any religious beliefs that we have and our personal beliefs even. So how can those types of factors impact the grieving process, and how do you approach providing support that respects that kind of diversity?
When it comes to my work, what I believe is irrelevant because I meet my client wherever they are. Whatever they believe is what's important. Yeah. And so I honour what they believe. We can't change someone's beliefs and perceptions. And when it comes to grief and loss, your perceptions and your belief systems can change in a blink of an eye. Mine did. My whole belief in the universe actually changed. It's not uncommon. Some people will move closer to their religion. Some people will move further away from their religion. So there's lots of different factors that come in. Your personal beliefs are, in my opinion, irrelevant when it comes to somebody else's belief systems. I'm not here to change anyone's belief systems. I'm here to work with whatever they believe. Some people believe that you die, you get buried in the ground, end of story.
Yeah.
Other people believe that you become a spirit, you become an energy, and they connect with them energetically. It doesn't matter. Whatever brings you comfort, whatever feels right for you, I just go with that.
Yeah, I love that. It's a very compassionate approach. And I think with that in mind, let's play Eric Clapton's with Knocking on Heaven's Door. Enjoy this one. When we've been talking about grief and we've been talking about change, unexpected change, and talking about the role of personal resilience when we're going through a loss of any kind. And Christy's been informing us, which has been great. And I thought we might just touch on just, I guess, this idea of Grief Awareness Day and its importance. And I think it's important to acknowledge the impact of loss on individuals and society. So could you tell us a bit more about the significance of this day and why it's so crucial to raise awareness about grief from your own ideas?
From my own perspective, as I said, when Aaron died initially, I really did feel blindsided and people were not able to support me and I didn't know how to support myself. So any conversations that we can have to normalise the grief conversation is so incredibly important because so many people feel very isolated in their loss. They can feel misunderstood. They feel like, nobody understands them. And it can be a very lonely journey for many people. They will withdraw from society. So raising grief awareness is an important step in A, building literacy. So I love that you've got me on the show today, thank you, because the more we understand it, we can realise that everything that we're feeling is very normal, it's all there for a reason. But there are ways that we can heal, there are ways that we can help ourselves. We don't need to stay stuck in our pain. We need to learn healthy strategies for coping with the loss and for ensuring that our life can become bigger as a result of our loss. I talk about post-traumatic growth rather than post-traumatic stress. I'm not a fan of labels, but post-traumatic stress to me is unprocessed emotion. If I had to boil it down quite simply, it's we need to learn how to process those emotions. Those emotions have not been processed. You will never take away the fact that this event, this thing has happened to us, but we can process how we respond to it and how it triggers us moving forward.
Yeah, I love that. Gosh, there's so much in what you're sharing today. You touched on earlier how we need, when we're seeking support, to have a grief-informed mindset toward our healing journey. And I think you've just touched on that idea also of trauma and trauma-informed. So when you talked about the difference, I suppose, between trauma and grief and separated that out earlier for us. So I think it's important to have this type of education. And yeah, so I think it's good. We were talking off air about the role of triggers as well and how that can sometimes decrease our tolerance because we're getting triggered and we might flood. And like you say, we can have these isolating tactics, you know, sometimes as a coping mechanism that sometimes aren't the best. So tell us a little bit more about triggers and multiple triggers and how that affects us.
I love talking about triggers. Triggers are like a map to your pain. It is like a torchlight that says, hey, over here, there's something over here. That torchlight that's pointing at your pain is a map to your healing. Because when you can get very clear around where your pain is and you begin to work on those pain points, that is the pathway out. The triggers can come up. Supermarkets would have to be one of the biggest triggers for grievers. I know for me, going to the supermarket, I was feeding an 18-year-old growing man. He was hungry.
Yeah.
I remember a week after his death having to go to the supermarket and thinking, how can I even do this? How can I live this life without him? Walking down that aisle, everything I looked at, oh, 2 minute noodles. I don't need to buy 2 minute noodles. Weet-Bix. I don't need Weet-Bix and all the fillers for this growing man. And I worked with a lady whose husband had passed and she lives in regional, and she would drive an hour to go to the supermarket because she didn't want to bump into people and have a grief conversation.
Mm.
Now, there are different stages in our grief. In the first 6 months, of course, you do what you need to do.
Mm.
But if she's doing that 3 years on, that's something that needs to be looked at.
Yeah.
One of Aaron's friends worked in the supermarket and he got banned from the biscuit aisle because he was unpacking the jam fancies, which Aaron loved, and just had this massive grief trigger and had a meltdown anxiety attack in the supermarket aisle. So they banned him for his health and well-being from the supermarket aisle. So the triggers can come up everywhere. Yesterday I spoke to two people. One lady will not go to a park because her son has passed. Seeing children reminds her she'll never be a grandparent.
Mm.
Your world gets very small when you don't want to go outside.
Mm.
That's a problem that needs to be worked with, and it can be worked with. We can reduce that stimuli and help the nervous system to respond to the change.
Mm.
Change the thinking, work with the thoughts, the guilt, the what ifs, the if only, the shoulda, the coulda, the woulda, all that stuff that comes up. We need to work with them.
I think it's also, you've touched on the importance of awareness, like having awareness, and I like to think of this in this context. We've got to kind of catch ourselves in the act sometimes, because sometimes it's unconscious. Sometimes, you know, we don't even know why we're getting upset necessarily and might not be directly linking it to the person.
It's the key.
Yeah, and we're just feeling something, you know, and we just... And we, like you said, so turning toward the pain, looking at the pain, identifying it and being curious about it.
Really curious.
Yeah,
really bring that curiosity
and
in.
And have that awareness to kind of go, I need to catch myself in the act here so that I can deal with this effectively and not avoid it, not deny it, not bottle it up, not try to explain it away or push it away, or really look under the hood. You know, let's have a look.
At 100%. You're spot on, Kim.
So I love it so much. So we're right on the hour now, so we're going to go to the news, but Christy's going to stay on and we're going to talk about the other side of the news. We're going to start to talk about some practical advice for you, and if you or somebody that you know is going through a difficult challenge at the moment, a time of loss, we're going to talk about some advice and some resources that can support you. So here's the news. Welcome back to the show. This is Stories of Change with Kim Harris, and today I'm interviewing my very special guest, Christy Roberts. We've been talking about grief in honour of Grief Awareness Day, which is the 30th of August. And if you've been listening along, we promised after the news to start to kind of shift gears a little bit and start to think about some practical advice for you moving forward, and just where are we going? Where are we going with this particular topic? So I thought it might be interesting for listeners who might be going through a difficult time of loss about some advice that you might give them to navigate their grief journey and find the healing. And in particular, you mentioned when we're off air around the physical symptoms that people can sometimes feel, and to help people to start to understand that that might be a part of it too, and learning to navigate that.
My grief was very physical. When Aaron died, I lost 5 kilos in that first week.
Wow.
And I ended up with chest pains. I had heart palpitations. I was in so much shock and so dehydrated from the shock and the tears, I couldn't even remember to drink. And that created problems with my digestive system. A few months later, I didn't realise it, but through the stress, I was clenching my jaw and I ended up with some nerve damage on one of my teeth.
Mm.
You can get inflammation through the body. It reduces your immunity system, loss of appetite, binge eating. Like, it is absolutely hectic what goes on in your body.
Mm.
And so any of those experiences that people are feeling, like, grief can be very, very physical.
Mm.
For me, when I did my first self-directed healing session, my goal was to remove the pain on my chest because it was excruciating and it was moving into my throat. And this was mid-March 2020. So we were in COVID.
Mm.
And this is when we were very scared and there was a lot of fear.
Mm.
I thought I was getting COVID and wouldn't be able to go to his funeral.
Mm.
That's how much pain I had in my chest, into my throat. I did a healing session, this emotional healing, and the energy moved. 90 minutes later, it was gone.
Wow.
Because I leaned in and felt the emotional pain, I had a physical response. So that energy in the body, you know, the data is showing today, research is showing that 75 to 90% of stress in the body, 75 to 90% of disease is caused by stress in the body. And stress is emotion, emotion, it's energy in motion. So the more we can learn to deal with our stress, build our resilience, cope with our nervous system, the more our body will be alleviated of those physical responses. I've heard of many people who, for example, may have back pain and they've done all the testing, they can't find anything wrong. Well, I'd like you to consider it could be grief. So those aches, those pains in your body is listening. We said that earlier. You need to listen. And if something seems unexplained or it's coming into the same spot all the time, I would get pain in my left foot. My grief came out in my left foot. And so I would feel the energy in my foot. I would feel how alone I felt. I would feel how devastated I was in my foot and just hold it. Because the thing about emotions is emotions are fleeting in nature. They come, they go, they're very organic. However, if we don't process those emotions, they get trapped in the body. And the trapped energy in the body becomes denser and it turns into moods. And those moods, that's our anxiety. That's our depression. That's the road rage. It's the anger outbursts. It's the overwhelm. It's the stress. It's the addictions. It builds up in the body. If we don't learn those ways to move the emotion through our body, it gets stuck and it gets heavy, because grief is one of the heaviest emotions we can feel in our body. It is physically exhausting, especially in those first few months. That's why it's such a struggle for people to get out of bed. That's not unusual. I would just ask you, if you're listening and that is you, to just brush your teeth. Go back to bed and congratulate yourself for brushing your teeth. Taking those small steps, caring for yourself, is the most kind and nurturing thing that you can do. So that heaviness is very normal in the beginning. Now, if that's continuing as the months progress, that's when you need to reach out for support. I mean, I would recommend everyone reach out for support. The earlier, the better. It's never too soon to work on your grief if you've got a practitioner, a healer, a therapist that knows what they're doing. It's never too early, so don't worry about that. But get in there, do the work, move that energy through your body.
So how do we support someone we know if they're grieving a loss? So if we're not maybe particularly directly experiencing a loss, but we know someone's lost someone, how do we support them?
A great question. So grief support is very much about meeting them where they are and listening. So one of the best questions that you can ask someone who's grieving is, how are you feeling today? And I love adding today on the end and feeling, because how are you feeling today? You're literally asking them, how are they in that moment? Because you know what? Tomorrow can be different. And in a month, it might be different again. So they might be great today, but in a week's time, they may not be good. So how are you feeling today is a really powerful question. I feel it's so much better. I would get text messages saying, how are you? I don't even know how to answer that question.
I do not know either.
Where do I even start?
I don't know. Where do you start with that
one? So when you ask the question, how are you feeling today, listen. Actually pause. Sit in the silence. Grief makes people uncomfortable. That's why we try to fix them. We try to make them happy. Sometimes sitting in the pain, sitting in the silence, is the most powerful thing you can do for anybody, is to recognize, allow them to feel what they're feeling. No judgments. You're just validating that experience. And there is so much power in the silence and power in the pause. Now, the reason there's power in the pause, because people would say to me, how are you feeling today? Which is the question that I've asked them to ask me. And my mind would scramble because of the trauma. And my mind would be, I don't even know how I feel. Where do I go? And it would take me time almost to pick up the pieces and to come back with a sentence. Now, more often than not, the conversation had moved on because they weren't comfortable with the silence. So that power in the pause is the really powerful thing that you can do, is just sit with them. Mm. Another thing, the second best thing that I feel you can do is nothing. You don't have to do anything. Yeah. Yeah. So we are raised in this society where, you know, we're fixers. So when someone's not happy, we want to make them happy again. Mm. Please don't do that. Mm. I had one friend, and bless her, I love her. She knows who she is, but it was like, I can't wait to take you dancing and get out and have a drink. I couldn't think of anything worse than going out dancing.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, dancing triggered me because Aaron loved to dance.
Yeah.
So, yeah, don't do that.
Maybe don't ask. What do you need?
Yeah. So when someone's complaining about a problem, we don't have to offer suggestions. We don't have to fix them. They're not broken. We don't need solutions. We don't need answers. Just get comfortable with the uncomfortable. Mm. I think that's a really important aspect of this grief conversation, being comfortable with the uncomfortable and witnessing their pain. That is the most powerful thing that we can do. People need their pain witnessed. Grief, it needs to be witnessed. I've got some questions that you can ask yourself as well. Mm. How can I sit with them? How can I be that one person who is making them feel that they're doing it right? Mm. Show you care enough to have the conversation. We talked earlier about, you know, not wanting to ask about your friends or not wanting to ask about someone because you don't want to trigger the grief. If anybody thinks we have forgotten our grief, they're crazy. So it can be really powerful if you know their person to talk about them. To have the conversation, show you care enough to have the conversation. And like I said, don't worry about triggering them because I assure you they have not forgotten. So share stories, share what you miss, make it real and help them just be okay, normalize the conversation. Something that I often do with my clients is I will say, the minute they bring up grief, I will say, what's their name? They'll say, oh, my brother. What's their name? Andrew. Can you tell me something you love about Andrew? And the light, their face lights up, and that can be a really beautiful segue into connecting them with their loss and the love that they feel.
Mm. I love that because I guess what's going on psychologically, sometimes we have those intonations where people, like grief and love, are so closely wrapped that you can sometimes not feel grief without feeling love. So if you can separate them and learn to feel love and then learn to feel grief as two separate things.
So Kim, I call them love bubbles.
Love bubbles.
So sometimes now, because I'm 3.5 years on, when the loss comes up, it's not this debilitating loss that it used to be. It's kind of gentle. It's kind of like a wave. I just ride the wave and I will call it a love bubble. I just miss him. And so that can be really nice. It's just a love bubble. So I just sit and connect and love him.
Beautiful. Well, I do have a song here by James Taylor, which is a bit of an oldie. It's called Fire and Rain, but it just talks about this idea that sometimes we never know when our time's up and we lose people unexpectedly. So this is a song about that. So looking ahead, Christy, I'm really interested to know what you think about this whole field of grief healing and support and how that's going to evolve in the coming years. And are there any trends or changes that you're seeing in the industry?
It's a great question. We are in the digital age and we are now global. Mm. So, for example, I'm a moderator in a grief support group in America. That supports people worldwide. So I'm part of David Kessler's team, the Tender Hearts group. So if anyone's looking for a grief support group, it is a wonderful group because it's not just going in and talking about your pain. There's a full program behind it. So there's activities that you do, there's different checkpoints, different days, different things. So we meet the grievers at different stages and take them through a full program. There's a lot of sort of hype now around grief informed, the word grief informed, and grief informed just means you know a bit about grief. There's books, there's resources, there's podcasts. We have so much at our fingertips now. So if you're looking for somebody who is to work with from a grief perspective, you really want to be looking for a grief expert or a grief authority, because anyone can say do a quick course and call themselves grief informed. The trend is that there is more awareness. Now, whether I feel that because I'm in the space, yeah. I'm not sure.
Yeah.
But I do know I'm running grief masterclasses now for the Australian Doula College, and I've had the Red Nose team in, and I'm getting sort of taps on the shoulder. I'm coming in for the show today. So there's definitely a thirst for it.
Yeah.
People are becoming more aware. People are becoming more ready to have the conversations. We do live in a culture where we've learned not to feel our pain.
Mm.
You know, boys don't cry and you're too emotional.
Big girls don't cry either. Big girls don't cry.
Yeah, pull up your panties. Your big girl pants.
Big girl pants on you.
Yes. So it is shifting.
Mm.
And the more we have these conversations, the more we're able to get it out there and the more we normalise the experience of loss and encourage people to have the courage to have the conversations.
Mm.
That's where I feel the power is. We need to accept that actually this is how I feel and it's okay or it's not okay. I need to do some work around it and move forward.
Yeah, I love that. And I guess that makes me think about too that as we educate ourselves, it's really important to educate ourselves on the process. So tell us a little bit about the stages of grief in that kind of way, that there is a process that we can go through and there are things that we can do at different stages depending on what the stage is. Tell us a little bit about that.
Hmm. It's so important because a lot of people will feel that grief has a timeline. Mm. Many grievers will say, well, how long am I going to feel like this for?
Mm.
And grief doesn't have a timeline, but it does have stages.
Mm.
And from a professional perspective, it's important to understand the stages because those stages will determine my interaction and my intervention.
Mm.
For example, before a loss happens, so if somebody has been diagnosed with an illness or there is an impending loss that's coming up, they've been told they're being retrenched, there's an impending loss coming up, what will happen is they will go into what we call anticipatory grief. So, so anticipatory grief is the grief before the loss actually occurs.
Mm.
Sometimes people feel that they should be more prepared then when the loss happens and they're not.
Mm.
But sometimes they are. Sometimes that time, everyone is different. I've worked with many people who have been in anticipatory grief, the loss has happened, and they're like, I do not understand why I feel this way because I thought I'd done the work.
Ready for this, yeah.
For some people, it will, especially in the event of death, it will always be too soon.
Mm.
There will never be enough time.
Mm.
So that's anticipatory grief. When the loss happens, we go into acute grief.
Mm.
So that's the survival phase when it's literally everything is a struggle. It is absolutely overwhelming and you are sinking. You are not swimming. Mm. So that's the acute stages of grief.
Mm.
The next stage is what we call early grief. Acute can be 1 month, it can be a year. It can be different for different people.
Yep.
The early stages of loss, typically kind of a year, 2 years around there.
Mm-hmm.
In many ways, at 3.5 years, I still feel sometimes I'm in early grief because I wake up and I forget and then I remember and it's hard.
Mm.
So early grief, it just gets a little bit gentler. What happens is you're beginning to learn coping mechanisms.
Mm.
You're beginning to put one foot in front of another and you're beginning to create a new life.
Mm.
Because when a significant loss happens, your life changes. And you change.
Mm.
You're not the same person.
Mm.
So integrating that loss moving forward, we learn those coping mechanisms. We learn to function, hopefully in healthy ways. Some people will lock themselves. I've worked with a woman who locked herself and stayed in her bed for a year.
Mm.
So the quicker we can move into these stages, that's where the interventions are useful.
Mm.
Early grief, about up to 2 years. On average, there's no, I hate to put time frames on this because it is different for everyone.
Mm.
Then as time goes on, we move into what we call mature grief. And mature grief is where the grief's still there. We've learnt to integrate the loss, but it'll still come up in a love bubble. It's not as painful. It's not as intense, but sometimes it can be.
Mm.
So it can come in like a tsunami and it can be gone. But typically the duration will be less. The intensity can be less. And you move forward. So you've just learnt those mechanisms. You've built your new life around your loss and you are moving forward and in healthy ways, hopefully.
Mm.
If you're not learning those healthy coping strategies, you will get stuck in it.
Yeah. Mm. It's having the maturity to go, hang on to something.
And the courage to do the work.
Yeah, absolutely. So they are they all the stages then? You've gone through all of them. Excellent. I wasn't sure if I interrupted you. That's a totally different thing. Excellent. So, okay, well, what about some tips then? So obviously we've got some tips around grief. And so what might be some tips that relate and tell us perhaps what stage of grief they might be useful for?
Yeah, the tips that I'd like to share today are specifically focused on the acute phase, so that early loss when you're literally in survival mode. Some of these sound very simple, but let me tell you, grief brain is a real thing. And when your body is in shock, you need to be reminded. So if anyone's listening, get your pen and paper out. This is a good time to take some notes. So the first tip is to accept and ask for help. Ask for help. This is where you can bring in your friends. If you're running a household, can someone do the groceries for you? Can someone drop off meals? Can someone just come and sit with you on the couch to keep you company? You might not even want to talk about it. But the people around you will want to help you. And sometimes we need to guide them to help us. The second tip is to drink lots of water. As I mentioned earlier, in my loss, I was severely dehydrated and I couldn't remember to drink. We actually got my daughter's friends on board and they would send us Snapchat images of them drinking and glasses of water. And that was a really good way to get them involved in helping us.
Yeah.
And it would remind me to drink water. So what do you need to do to remind yourself to drink? Third step is to eat healthy foods. Some people will lose their appetite and some people will overeat. So consider, what are superfoods? Nourish your body. You will need every single ounce of energy that you can muster. So make sure that what you're putting in is sustaining you, because that's going to help you. You don't want to be dealing with all the physical symptoms later on. So the more you can mitigate that and reduce that, the better, by eating healthily. Whatever you're able to put in your mouth, make sure it's healthy. The fourth tip is to have healthy boundaries around your visitors. People can turn up unannounced. People can turn up and before you know it, you're supporting them. So no is a full sentence. And it is okay to say no. It is okay to put some boundaries in around that. In early loss, your phone, the text messages, the phone calls, the interaction that you will get. I have people messaging me that I hadn't spoken to for years, which I love, but I didn't have energy. And please don't feel that you have to respond to everybody. Please don't feel that you have to return every phone call. It's not necessarily etiquette, just because someone has reached out to you, that you have to reach back to them. You need to conserve your energy for your grief. That is more important. And you can come back to that later. I remember I'd come up for air every couple of days and I'd just sit there and just send a heart back. Thank you, heart. Because I had to choose, for me, I just chose three or four girlfriends that I would communicate with, and that's all I had the energy for. So have healthy boundaries around those visitors. The next step is to focus on micro moments. So especially if the loss is traumatic. And that means going out and just, I don't know, looking at a flower, breathing the air, smelling the grass, watching the ocean, feeling the breeze on your cheek, and literally slowing down your breath, because breathing is a common side effect. It becomes very shallow. So really breathe into your lungs and go out. Nature is really powerful. Take your shoes off, walk on the grass. It's very grounding and it reminds you that you're alive. It grounds you. Moving your body is the next tip. I struggled. I knew I needed to move. I forced myself to go for a bike ride one day. I really didn't want to. I felt amazing afterwards. And it's hard, because when I moved my body, I felt alive and it reminded me that Aaron was dead. So that even triggered me riding my bike, because I could feel the air on my face. So I had to put sunglasses on to look after myself. But it was the best thing. Reaching out for support is really important, and joining grief support groups. And find the right group too, because many groups will just give you a forum to talk about your pain, but there are other groups, like, for example, the Tender Hearts group, that will go that step further. It just depends what works for you.
Mm.
You might go to one group and it might not be a good fit. Mm. Try a different one. There's many groups out there.
Mm.
Getting professional support is really important, and I have reiterated this a number of times. You need to go to someone who's grief experienced and they understand loss.
Mm.
It's like in the medical field, you wouldn't go to a podiatrist to fix a sore tooth, would you?
No.
So go get the right professional support. And lastly, in those early losses, and we've talked about this as well, is learn how to process your emotions in healthy ways.
Mm.
Don't avoid them, don't suppress them. When you suppress your emotions, they just get stuck, they get trapped inside. And there are many ways to suppress. Many people will meditate or do gratitude or positive affirmations as ways
to bypass.
Yeah. And they can be very calming in the moment, which is important, great strategies. But if you are doing that to avoid doing the healing work and processing the pain, that's the problem. So learn how to feel what you need to feel.
Mm.
So it actually does organically, naturally leave the body, and you're finishing that sort of cycle grief loop. Yeah.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. And I think about little kids when they have a big cry and they do their full teary cry, and then they get to this place where they're and then they just calm down and fall asleep. And it's like they've completely, if you just hold them through that process and just allow them to finish to the end, you know, and be there witnessing them, you don't even have to say anything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's similar, I think, in the way that you're describing it. Like, we're going to have this intensity, like hyper arousal state you talked about earlier. And it's a lot of energy. So whilst we can feel really depleted of energy sometimes we get that hyper arousal state where we've got too much energy. So we need to get on the bike and we need to shift it. Like, we need to burn it, you know, in healthy ways as well. So,
yeah,
the more aware we are of what's actually going on, the more we then go, okay, this is my next step.
And crying's interesting. Some people will feel like if they start crying, they'll never stop. I guarantee you will stop. You cannot cry forever. And Benjamin J. Harvey, who's one of my mentors from Authentic Education, he says if you're going to cry, cry like crying is an Olympic sport and you're going for gold.
That's good. I like that tip. That is a good tip. Are there any other tips?
No.
I interrupt you again? Okay, good. Good. So I guess on this idea of tips, and you've shared obviously the Tender Hearts group, are there any other books or websites or other resources that you might recommend that to individuals who are seeking to learn more about grief or coping with their own loss or this subject of building resilience around all these things?
Absolutely. Mm. David Kessler has a book. David Kessler and Elizabeth Kubler-Ross have a book on grief and grieving, which outlines the stages of grief, which is really important.
Mm-hmm.
And then David Kessler has created a book called Finding Meaning, which is the sixth stage of loss. And it's not about finding meaning in the loss, it's about what you do after the loss. So that's really powerful ways of connecting moving forward, how you can honour your loved one and move forward with that loss. So that's a beautiful book. The Australian Doula College, if you're in anticipatory loss and you're helping someone through a life transition, the Australian Doula College has end-of-life doulas.
Mm.
That could be a really good resource for you there as well.
Mm, amazing. Mm. Very good. And, of course, yourself as well. How can people find out about you, Christy?
Oh, yes, I forgot about me. So my website is christyrobertscoaching.com. My business is called Creating Change, and I offer one-to-one sessions. So I work one-to-one with clients. They go on to a monthly membership, or I can just come in and do a healing or a coaching session around a specific thing and help them move that energy through their body as well.
Wonderful.
Yeah. I have a lot of resources on my website.
Mm.
There's a grief ebook. I run masterclasses. I do podcasts.
Mm.
So have a look on there. There's a lot of blogs and there's a lot of content on the website. And feel free to reach out, because I do offer free discovery calls.
Mm.
If you know someone who's really struggling with a loss and just needs some support, book in for a free call, because I'm more than happy to offer that, offer some more suggestions and resources that are specifically targeted for your circumstances, because we've talked very general today.
Is that something they can access via your website?
Correct, yes. Through the contact page on my website, you can book a free discovery call.
Excellent, excellent. Thank you so much. All right. Well, we have been talking about so much. We're coming up to 21 minutes to one already. The time has definitely flown. I'm going to play one more song and then we're going to come back and share some final thoughts. But this particular song is by Ed Sheeran and it's called Supermarket Flowers. And I think this is just a beautiful song with some beautiful lyrics. You've been listening to Stories of Change with Kim Harris and our very special guest today, Christy Roberts, who is a grief expert and healer, and she's been sharing lots of wisdom and guidance around this topic of grief and building personal resilience when we've had some kind of unexpected change or loss. So, Christy, is there a message or insight you'd like to share with our audience about finding hope and healing in the midst of grief and unexpected change?
Grief is so challenging for so many of us on so many different levels. I think the message that I'd like to share is that it is actually possible to live fully again. Our lives can feel, because if we have experienced a loss, if our partner of 40 years has passed, or a child, or even our mother, you know, our mother might be 93 years old and we're 70, and that's the only mother we've ever known. And life without her, when she's been such a significant part of our life, it can be such a big life transition for many people. So learning to live well, learning to live fully is such an important step on the journey. And I believe that's why we're here. We're born to live our best life. And my work, whilst I specialise in grief and trauma, is very much about how to help people navigate the journey of life, how to live well, how to have healthy relationships, how to work and have a career that you're proud of, or in your retirement, so how to find things that you're truly passionate about and that connect yourself with yourself, because many people can become very disconnected. That's a different conversation that we don't have time for today, but they can become disconnected. So we can live fully again.
Yeah, I love that idea, because I was just thinking, as you were saying, this idea of living fully, and we do have people that do practice what they call spiritual bypassing. That's when they do avoid or deny what's really going on for them and they try to move on really quickly. And I've noticed in my coaching that I do that some people can't even savour joy or happiness, and I know in my own grief story how it almost feels like it's sort of like if I'm happy, there's some sort of weird mixed up belief that I have in my head that means I'm not really missing my loved one anymore, you know, because I'm happy now. And so it's like this, I feel this guilt over actually living my life fully, because I feel like I should be grieving for all of my life for this person, and I should be sad forever because I've lost this person. So I think this idea of living fully, it's not as easy as sometimes we think, because we have these misinformed beliefs, you know, and we have these systems that are kind of keeping us, like you say, trapped in a way of behaving about our loss. So yeah, very, very, I think it's a, and this is why we're talking about it.
I love that you've raised that too. And yes, there's spiritual bypass. It's also called toxic positivity and bright siding, and it's where we're bypassing our pain. We find a strategy. We're not doing it consciously necessarily, but we find a strategy that makes us feel calmer in the moment. We talked about gratitude and meditation. Meditation.
Mindfulness,
and those sorts of things. Many people view anger, sadness as negative emotions. They're not negative. All our emotions are there for a reason, and they help us be a fully balanced person. The guilt conversation's an incredibly important conversation because it's one of the biggest aspects of grief is the guilt that comes with it. And the mind will come in and create stories. Because here's the thing, when it comes to grief, pain is inevitable. You will experience pain when there's a big loss. However, the suffering, which is the mind, the thoughts, the stories that the mind makes up, that's not inevitable. That's optional. And so when I say doing the work, I'm talking about working with those thoughts, working with the guilt, playing it out. The mind will try to make sense of things that don't make sense, and it gives us more control. It gives us superpowers in some instances, because we feel like we could have changed the outcome of death. And it's not necessarily the case.
So,
guilt is a really important conversation.
Well, I think we've talked about bringing you on again during Grief Week. So there's a Grief Week towards the end of the year. I think it's in December. So we'll probably have you on again and maybe unpack some of those really strong, some of those structures like guilt that come into play with grief. I think that will be really helpful for people to learn about that. And perhaps talk about some of the interventions as well that you talk about, the expertise, you know, side of it. Yeah, because I think that would be really interesting as well. Wow, and I think there was one other thing that you would have liked to talk about, which is that this idea of multiple losses. Tell us a little bit about that and the impact of that.
I really want to share this because it affects so many people. When we are experiencing more than one loss, what happens is our mind will be grieving, and then all of a sudden, so say, for example, you're grieving your mother who's passed, and you're grieving your mum, and then the next minute, Ted pops in, and then it's Sarah, and then somebody else, and then somebody else. And it's almost like, you know, the game whack-a-mole, where the moles jump up and you hit the mole and it bangs back down. It's a bit like that when it comes to multiple losses. We cannot heal when we're grieving multiple losses all at the same time. We need to actually separate them out. And so for anyone out there who is experiencing multiple losses, I really encourage you to think of it like you're meeting a friend or you're going on a date. What you do is you put the phone away. You don't answer the door when someone knocks. So the minute someone else comes knocking, oh, honey, I'll come to you next week. I'm just with Sarah right now. And so you work with one at a time. And now it might be just 5 minutes. You might play a song. And then next Thursday you might decide to go for a walk where your mum liked to walk. And then the following week you might do something else. If and when you're ready, it's not a race. So it's taking your time, but seeing if you can just focus on one loss at a time and sitting with that and holding that. And if you can almost, I'm not a fan of compartmentalization, but this is an instance when compartmentalization can be useful. It's like literally a box, pull that box out, work with that box, put it back.
So it's organizing rather than compartmentalizing.
It can get very distracting because the losses can pile in on each other and it gets very overwhelming. So if you can work with one at a time and just invite the others to just wait their turn, that can be an easier way to help you actually begin to heal.
Excellent. Very good advice. Well, as we come to the close of today's session, I know we've said off the air that we could talk about this for hours. And I'm sure we could, because you've got a lot of insight to share with our audience about finding hope and healing in the midst of all of these sorts of things. So I just really wanted it to express my heartfelt gratitude to you today, Christy. Thank you so much for coming on the show, for educating us, informing us, sharing your expertise, giving us lots of tips, but also shedding light on some of these intricacies, some of these complexities within the grief, the scope of grief. And these, and we've touched on these aspects of resilience and coping and healing. So we don't want to leave you where you're at. We want to move on and find a way to integrate these experiences and live more fully. But we want to help you do it in that really authentic, self-compassionate way, in the way that you've talked about. So thank you for all of those, for your wisdom today, and for reminding us that it is a challenge, you know, and there is no race, and it is, you know, not time dependent, and it's just taking the time to integrate the experience, to reconnect with ourselves, to reconnect with the person that we might have lost, or the experience if it's a loss of job. There's probably relationships involved there that you lose sometimes when you move on from a job. And I guess that you've left me with this feeling of hope, like even in the darkest moments, there can be light, and it's just finding our way through and, like you say, slowing it right down so we can just take one small step at a time. And it might be just brushing your teeth today. I love that one. So remember that life's unexpected changes and losses are an inherent part of the human experience, and Christy's advice to build resilience and seek support and honour our loved ones whilst moving forward is a great roadmap for anyone who is facing this type of challenge. So before we wrap up, Christy, is there a final message you'd like to share with the audience?
Thank you. It's been wonderful being on the show today. I would just encourage everyone to get really curious, listen to your body, notice what's going on for you, and really lean into the pain rather than sort of trying to push it down and suppress it and avoid it. And most of all, just be kind to yourself. So just holding space for everyone out there, for all our loved ones. Mm. They're never far away, so let's just send them a moment of love.
Mm, beautifully said, Christy. And your words are a source of comfort and inspiration, I'm sure, to many people listening today. And you remind us all that healing is a journey that is actually worth embarking on. And thank you once again for being part of today's show and sharing your expertise with us. And to our dear listeners, if you would like to refresh, as Christy said, you know, we can't take in all of the information all in one go sometimes. So you can catch up today's episode, re-listen to it via our podcast. So you can find that through yarravalleyfm.org.au. And we will also put that up on social media so that you can re-listen at your leisure. And yeah, feel free to share it, please, with your networks as well, because it's such an important episode that we've, you know, that we've presented today, and we really want to get the word out to everybody that we possibly can. So remember, if you or someone you know is struggling with grief, there is support available, so reach out to us as well. We've Christy's given you her website. You can reach me through the Yarra Valley FM social groups. You can reach me via my own website, kimharris.co, and there is ways that we can express what we need to our friends and family and professionals who can help us with their guidance and understanding. So, as we wrap up, let's carry forward all the wisdom and compassion that we've gained today. And thank you so much for joining us. Stories of Change is on each Monday between 10 to 1. So, join me next week. And in the meantime, take care of yourself and of each other.